Yo, what's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Dialogue Heavy with yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. So, as of now, as usual, everything that I've written on here, whether it be short stories, screenplays, novels, whatever, is all written by me, Michael Anthony McMillan. So I have a different story for you guys today. This is called Love and Carcinoma. This is a story, I don't know, I can't remember exactly how this was dreamed up in my head, but I thought to myself one time, what would you do if you only had a short amount of time left? And in this circumstance, this is a gentleman who has a short amount of time left that he's blessed and cursed with the curse of knowing how much time he has left on this planet. So he has to figure out what he wants to do with that short amount of time. So without further ado, I'm going to just go ahead and get into it, because I'm going to make this maybe two or three different portions, two or three different episodes. And I just want to see what you guys think. So here we go. This is called Love and Carcinoma, written by Michael Anthony McMillan. Here we go. David, a short, unattractive, awkwardly shaped man with dirty pale skin emerges out of the doctor's office devastated. He tries miserably to get a grasp on what has just transpired moments ago inside of the doctor's office while walking along a busy street. Carcinoma? What? David looks at his doctor half in disbelief. Yep, been in there for some time, David. David's doctor retorts. When was the last time you had a checkup? David looks down past his dirty Converse at the black and white tiled floor, thinking to himself. He shakes his head, knowing he's never had a checkup in his life, although he has been there countless times for his old man and mother. Fucking carcinoma, David says to himself in disbelief as he sits at a bus stop next to an old lady in a beautiful blue and green flower dress looking into the abyss. David is only 42 years old. A young man, relatively, given 24 hours or so, give or take, to live. By the time the sun was in full bloom on Saturday morning, he'd be gone forever. And there wasn't a damn thing he could do about it. His dad, gone. His mother, gone too. Both of them dead for about 5 years now. And with not a single family member to be heard from, the Meripov bloodline would end with David. So he was screwed. Jesus, says David. I guess focusing on making money wasn't the most important thing I could have ever done. Only depend on myself, huh? Thanks, Mom. Don't trust anybody. Thanks, Dad. Well, look at me now, David thought while riding the number 2 bus that smelt faintly of piss. Fuck the both of you. At least you guys had each other. Who do I have? Huh? Nobody. I work alone. I live alone. I got no friends. Fuck! So what? I made a shit ton of money. It don't mean shit if I don't have anybody to share it with, David recollected. I ain't got no wife, no children, no siblings, nothing. It's just me. Me and all this fucking money. Sulking on this couch grimly, with his arms crossed, suddenly David had an epiphany. His eyes brightened up, and he sat up excited for the first time maybe ever. You know what? David said aloud, as if someone else was in his house with him. If I have to go out, I might as well go out blazing. David walks to his closet and grabs a change of clothes and stuffs them in an old suitcase his mother bought. His old suitcase his mother bought the one time when they all went to San Francisco as a family in his youth. I'ma blow all this shit in one wop before I die. Why not? David thought as he walked to his kitchen and grabbed his old dirty blue and white cooler he used for lunch when he worked. I sure as hell can't take it with me. I'm gonna do whatever the fuck I want. For once, in the time I have left, they won't control me for another second, David thought, as he grabbed his keys and headed out the door out of his family's home for the last time in his life. See, the thing is, David Sr. and Peloria, David's parents, came from Dagestan, Russia, a very poor farm country with very little resources. And as rough as it was, just like any other country, it was harsher still on the impoverished, which of course both David's parents' families were. So they were fucked. There was no rags to riches story in Dagestan. There was still a class system there where you were either born into wealth or born into shit. Being poor, the best job you could ever get, if you were lucky, was to be a toilet cleaner at some rich family's palace. David Sr. might have succumbed to this life of despair had he not fallen in love with a farmer's daughter by the name of Peloria. After being shot by Valentine himself, he couldn't imagine himself slaving for nothing, or better yet, watching his wife to be to do so as well. So the two of them fled together from their families, who didn't want them together to begin with, in the middle of the night, and took the long, tiresome pilgrimage to America. They illegally dodged border patrols and escaped smuggling traps, barely making it by the skin of their teeth. Once here, the young lovebirds did two things at all times. One, minded their own damn business, and two, worked around the clock. They worked their fingers to the bone for shit pay, too, practically seeing each other in passing for 20 years. David's mother worked all day and David's dad all night to make ends meet, and they saved every penny. I mean, every penny. They were so afraid of being broke and away from home that they never spent a dime of anything that wasn't scrutinized and argued over first. But still, even with all that, the long dangerous trip, the backbreaking work, and constant penny pinching, the United States of America was still a cakewalk in comparison to the previous years back in Russia, where everyone spent their entire life and limbs serving a dictator that cared little to nothing for his own people. Yep, David's parents were pretty happy to escape and work for pennies if it ensured them a couple of years of bliss at the end of it all before they passed on. That's all they knew. So, as David grew up, he had the same, if not better, work ethic, saving every dime he had. Under the cape of his parents' house, staying there well into his 30s by the time they passed on. And he wasn't going to sit alone in the same house he grew up in his whole life with the same disease that took his parents and rot alone. He had to get his life's desire, even if it killed him. David admired his immigrant parents who came to this country with nothing, sacrificed everything, and conquered the American dream. But there was one thing that his father and mother had that David Jr. would forever be jealous of. One thing that he would happily die for and trade all the money that he ever made and saved for. Something that David's parents together never paid a dime for in all those years of work and sacrifice. And that was love. David Sr. and Peloria Maripov loved each other with everything that they had, and that was personified in the creation of David II. David wanted, needed, and was going to have that feeling before leaving this place no matter what. David wouldn't allow himself to leave this place without tasting it for at least a second. But how? How could he get that in one night, though? How could he meet and fall in love with a beautiful woman, and even harder, have her love him back in this short span of time he had left? Impossible, right? Well, lucky for David, he lived in America, where anything can be bought for the right price. I say this because, and this is uncomfortable, David wasn't, well, how can I put this? David wasn't a model, let's put it like that. He stood 5'2" tall with shoes, pudgy, with murky, pale skin from all his hard working years as a rigger, the guys that clean out those huge oil drums at the oil refineries. He was forever nocturnal looking and looked as such with the dark rings around his eyes like a raccoon from working graveyard shifts 7 days on, 7 days off at 12 hours a pop. The kid had no life, poor bastard. And it's not like he wanted to be alone either. Nobody wants that, right? He just had a shit work schedule and was plagued with shitty jeans, shitty farm worker jeans, and social awkwardness. So, on one of those desperate, lonely nights in the winter months, David pulled up a chair to his old man to his old man's desk, and he searched the internet for love. He went on all the popular dating sites and became a member. He put his likes and hobbies up, which included watching the Best in Show Dog competition on television and certain Japanese comics. And would you believe it? After all that hard work, putting himself out there, trying not to die alone, not a single lady took the bait. The ladies just wouldn't give David a shot. That was until one night. David received a message on Plenty of Fish from a very pretty, very chubby girl named Bernice. David was so excited he can hardly sleep. And the night before they met at Fortune Garden, the Chinese food restaurant not too far from David's house, David got all spruced up, meaning he wore the only outfit he owned that wasn't his work uniform. But still, at least he ironed it. He took a shower and he even got a haircut. David looked good, at least he thought. He got Bernice flowers and a box of candy like it was fucking the 1960s and took himself right on down to Fortune Garden restaurant. As David fixed the old bow tie his father David fixed the old bow tie his father used to wear to take out his mother on rare occasion in the window of the restaurant. Looking in, David saw Bernice sitting alone, looking down at her menu, just as beautiful as ever. "Holy shit," David said to himself, watching her as she smiled at the waiter when he brought her a Coke. She looked even prettier than her pictures, and she looked like she had lost some weight since as well. David took a huge, nervous breath, then walked in. A Christmas bell strategically tied to the top of the door chimed as David walked in, and Bernice's head turned in slow motion, and as she focused on David, all her beauty, all her charm, all her smiles turned to dread at the sight of David looking like a short, stubby ogre on his way to a funeral. Immediately, a lump the size of charcoal for the barbecue pit swelled in David's throat, and "Fuck!" is the next word that was uttered out of the mouth of this beautiful woman. Followed by, "Cancel my order, please." The waiter looked from Bernice to David, not sure of what was going on. David was just about ready to shit himself when, boom, Bernice grabbed her purse and whizzed past David without a word. Even with the sweet smell of Bernice's perfume that filled the air, in her passing, David shook his head, looking down ashamed. Then all of a sudden, "Hey, yo," said someone in the restaurant, and David snapped his head back, half hoping somebody else named Bernice came out of the restroom and says that she had played a trick on him. David looked around only to see the angry waiter throwing a dirty dish rag over his shoulder. "That your date, that girl?" David, still embarrassed, can't even bring himself to speak. He just nodded yes. "Okay, she order, you pay." David, now in complete shame, just opened his wallet and dumped all the contents of it he had on a nearby counter, leaving back out into the darkness of the night and of his life. David opened his apartment door, wet from the sudden rain that had come upon him, making his night even worse, and stepped inside with a white plastic bag that read "Thank you" written across it in red letters. As he sat at his computer eating chow mein, David took one last look at Bernice's profile page. Damn, she was hot, David thought as he looked at a photo of Bernice in a yellow and white polka dot bathing suit. David then went to his own profile, and there in the profile picture stood a 6'3" man with shiny blonde hair, shirtless, carrying a fire hose on his shoulder. David smirked to himself. Well, how was she supposed to act? How was she supposed to act, idiot? She thought she was getting Brad Pitt from Troy, and she got a troll from under the bridge in a fairy tale. David shook his head, embarrassed again, and yet slightly amused. Then deleted the profile, closed his laptop, and headed to bed alone, as usual, again. An old portly man tilted his head down to see over his glasses at David later. "Are you sure?" David nodded nonchalantly as he looked around at the people in line looking to handle their bank inquiries. "All of it," the bank manager repeated, looking at David with concern. David just nodded yet again. The manager raised his eyebrows and continued to funnel stacks and stacks of $100 bills into a money counter machine. The sound of the continuous fluttering bills forced the bank patrons to turn their head in the direction of David and the team of bank employees needed to count his money. A young brunette in a black skirt with a white blouse placed already counted stacks of money into David's old blue and white lunchbox cooler. Okay, Mr. Maripov, that's $552,078, the bank manager said as he stood up and shook David's hand. Do you want security to walk you to your car, Mr. Maripov? That's an awful lot of money to carry. David coughed a hard cough, and wiped his mouth. Blood stained his crumpled napkin, and David looked up to see the bank manager and the money counting girls looking upon him with concern. David then walked out with not another word spoken. Without another word spoken, David walked out that branch for the last time in his life. Next, with a bus leaving David at a bus stop on Ocean Avenue, David walked a few blocks in the downtown area. He watched as people who didn't have a ticking time bomb inside their body coursed through their lives. Jealousy flowed through David's body as he walked through the streets. Men in business attire were walking in groups, smiling and laughing, no doubt, going or coming from lunch where they probably talked about women in football. Women in knee-high skirts with stockings and high heels walked across Broadway like models from a magazine. Lucky fucks, David thought to himself. They don't know how lucky they are to not know if they're going to die tomorrow or not. David turned down Pine Street and soon looked up to see a fancy rental car dealership and walked inside. Inside, the floors were sleek and had a mirror effect to which you can see yourself walking upside down if you stared down at the floor. To the left, there was a custom matte black Maserati, and to the right, a cherry red Porsche Cayenne. Straight ahead, Le Piste de Resistance was a beautiful off-white Maybach with a custom tan interior in the back that would just as well take up all the money that was in David's cooler had he had decided to buy it outright. David was looking carefully at all the nice cars when a flashy young dealer with jet black hair and a suit to match came from behind one of the other vehicles. "Which luxury car can I put you in today, sir?" David looked up at the man. He smiled. Off David's reaction, the dealer returns the smile with a grin of his own. 20 minutes later, David pulled out of that dealership, smiling in a very nice, very conservative, forest green Toyota Avalon. "Think I'm stupid?" David said to himself, smirking as he changes the radio to rock music and bobs his head. David drove along, smiling, with his lunch pail seat-belted into the passenger side. Soon, the roads of congested freeways turned to a quiet stretch of highway with giant mountains and desert as far as you can see. Later, at a gas station, David walked to his car with a big gulp in one hand and a bag of snacks, including a hot dog, in the other. No sense in watching my diet anymore, David thought to himself. It'll all be over soon. Back on the highway, David drove past a sign that read, Reno, Nevada, 20 miles, and at dusk, he pulled off the highway. David looked right, then left, then right again, and saw nothing in both ways. After a bit of frustration, David looked right again to see the faintest of lights in the distance. David had a half-nervous, half-smile plastered on his face. Showtime, David said as he made a turn for the building in the distance. Getting closer, David started to feel his chest pound. He coughed violently again and had to pull over, spitting blood onto a dirt road before getting back on it. Soon, the structure David was looking for came into view. It was a castle of sorts, all white and freshly manicured lines and statues strategically posted at a big wooden front door. And in the lights above read Bunny Ranch. After David put his car in park, he watched as two men walked down the ramp of the front entrance and into their cars. You're fine. You can do this, David repeated to himself, while simultaneously taking a big, deep breath through his nose and out through his mouth. When his heart rate finally subsided, David looked over at his lunch pail and took out a small stack of bills and shoved them into his pocket. He then walked up the ramp and grabbed the door handle. Holy shit, David thought to himself. Here we go. The place was a world of its own, and David was in shock by all the women walking in little to no clothes. Until that day, David had never seen a naked woman in the flesh in his entire life. Well, that's not true. There had been one time that he had unfortunately saw his mother naked when he was 14, catching her come out of the shower. David froze stiff as he watched the women walk around just like he did the day that he saw his mother. The place had mirrors everywhere. For what reason, David did not know and didn't care. The floors were posh, soft like you were walking on a cloud. David felt his heart rate slow a little bit. He was oddly comfortable in this little corner watching this miniature town play out. There were guys talking to girls at the bar to the right, and the bartender had his hands full mixing drinks and passing them onto a white girl in a skin-tight bathing suit that lined them up on a tray, then walked them around handing them to men and working girls. The men tipped the waitress and she gave them small kisses on the cheek and continued on. There were various types of couches sporadically laid out just about everywhere, and not one of them was empty. David's heart almost stopped when a Middle Eastern looking woman in a black see-through robe and a black bikini underneath came out of a room and into the lobby area. She was drop-dead gorgeous, with deep seductive eyes and bronze skin that seemed to glow. David stared, not having the ability to place his eyes anywhere else, when she then looked at David in passing, giving him just a glimmer of a smile while continuing to walk down another hall. Her small hips swayed brilliantly under that robe that seemed as though was caught in a windstorm. David's heart immediately started to beat a bit faster, and he calmed himself, repeating his breathing patterns from earlier. David looked around almost lightheaded and stopped at the sight of a big brute man talking
to a beautiful blonde with legs that went on for days at the bar. The two exchanged loving looks and charming smiles, then suddenly David saw the blonde's hand slowly slide under the bar and out of the sight of most patrons as she grabbed a handful of the gentleman's genitals. Holy shit, David thought to himself. It was one thing to watch something like that on TV or the internet masturbating with oneself while no one is around, but to see that in person was a whole nother level that David found he was not ready for. David got up about as quickly as he could, then walked across the lobby with his eyes averted to the floor, and before long found himself in front of a mirror in the men's room. David, come on, Dave, Dave said aloud while breathing deep in and out. You got one life to live, asshole, and there ain't much time left in it. David splashed water from the automatic faucet on his face. Now, you're going to go out there. You're going to be nice. And you're going to have fun. Then, when it's all said and done, you're going to take one of these beautiful ladies into the back room and fuck the living shit out of them. You got that? Then you can die in their arms and go to hell happy, you piece of shit. Now let's do this. David walked out of the men's room with a bit more confidence, eyes up, chest up, looking at his surroundings. Damn it, David said under his breath when he realized that a black girl in a tiger outfit that looked like it had been painted on her body had taken his nice secure corner seat. David stalked around for a while looking for a seat and finally settled awkwardly between two men in the middle of a conversation. Well, the last time I was here, I got the combo for $1,500, said one man. Combo, said the other man. David looked the man up and down, and he just couldn't ignore his outfit. He was dressed like he had just came from church. He had a black blazer with the pants to match and a set of dress shoes on him that reminded David of the ones his father used to wear when he went to job interviews. What do you mean combo? The suck and fuck combo, said the first guy, who looked as though he had took his Viagra a tad bit early, because he was sitting, but his dick was standing at attention. David looked away quickly. $1,500, huh? Which girl? The younger of the two asked. I had Rihanna Berry for that one. She's a better fuck. But so far, I like Cheryl Snow the best. Her body is better to my liking, you know, and she can suck a dick like no other. David couldn't believe what he was hearing or seeing. The two guys nodded at each other like they were discussing matters of philosophy. And David had found the conversation amusing yet knowledgeable. David looked around as a voice was heard from the surround sound speakers mounted in the corners of the lobby. All girls report to the loving lobby, please. I repeat, all available girls report to the loving lobby. Soon girls upon girls started pouring out of doors left and right, each one more beautiful than the one that preceded them, and all as different as night and day. Short ones, tall ones. There was even one girl who would classify as a little person. She had a short, chubby cankles with the tiny little high heels that could fit in the palm of David's hand. There were thick Latinas here and smaller Asian girls there, black girls with long extensions in their hair, and white girls that had the little short crew, the shorter crew type haircut. They all lined up with their unique type poses with smiles and bright white teeth, some fully dressed and others almost totally nude. David could not believe what the hell was happening. What a life it must be to work in a place like this, he thought to himself as he stared at them. Then after a moment or two, the palace entry doors open and in comes a tall, burly white man with a bald head and a full ash gray beard. He was gorgeous, David thought, with a perpetual smile on his face. He looked and smelled like money, and you can tell he was of the alpha male kind. He wore an ash blue suit with a crisp white button-up that fit to him like a glove and a brilliant diamond-encrusted timepiece. He was sharp, David thought, as the man walked past him and to the center of the room, and nobody dared tell him to take off those ridiculous $3,000 shades once he entered the place. "Hi, girls," the man said, as he handed his briefcase over to the lady that talked on the intercom earlier. "Hi, hi, hi," says all the girls, as they answered back collectively. Then, as if it was a daily ritual, one by one, each of the gorgeous ladies approached him like he was a god and gave him variations of hugs and kisses, or both in most cases. All right, girls, settle down," the man said as he took off his shades and revealed his beautiful ocean blue eyes. "I'm only in for a few minutes today," the girls collectively sigh and disappoint. I know, but I have a flight to Geneva in about an hour, so I just wanted to stop by and say hello and see all you pretty faces before I leave. You know, you never know what can happen at 5,000 feet in the air, you know what I mean?" The girls all looked at him with his half lust and half praise look. David rolled his eyes. "We'll fucking die already, buddy. Some of us have a time to keep. So I'll be in my office for a second, and if any of you girls have any questions or concerns, make sure you direct them to Bobby." The woman in the pantsuit with his briefcase nodded without a word. "And we'll take care of you, all right?" The girls cheered, "Yay!" and nodded as the fancy guy walked to the back office with Bobby. David thought to himself how interesting it was that the stigma on television of strippers and sex workers or whatever is that this line of work, you know, sucks for the girls. But this place and that guy didn't look half bad, David thought. Of course, he'd only been there a few minutes, but still, the environment was cool to him. Exactly the kind of environment needed for a guy who was going to die in this place in a couple hours. A bell rings, and the girls then turned their attention to David and all the other men in the room. All beautiful, all smiling, begging to be David's special date. David shyly looked from girl to girl, trying to find a connection. And before long, he saw a short gymnast type with freckles and long red hair that flowed past her bottom. As soon as she looked at David and gave him the slightest of smiles, his heart started beating like he'd tried to sprint a mile straight. His palms started to sweat and even his nose ran a little. David looked down immediately, ashamed, and pulled out a napkin. "Jesus, you fucking loser. Stop panicking," David thought to himself while he wiped his nose. David looked up after cleaning himself, and to his surprise, the redhead and her little tight gymnastic butt was walking down the corridor with a man in tight blue jeans and a black leather jacket. "Damn," David thought as he watched them disappear into a room holding hands. David couldn't help but to sigh at his own naivete. "Snooze, you lose," David thought to himself. David continued to look around at all the girls sitting on the side of the pool table. David continued to look around at all the girls sitting on the side of a pool table watching two men play billiard was an Italian girl with jet black hair and a big, beautiful nose. On a couch was a petite Asian girl on her cell phone playing into the stereotype of the Catholic schoolgirl with a cliche blue and green plaid short skirt with white leggings that went up to her knees, capped with those big bifocal glasses. To the right, standing next to the lion statue, was a black girl with lovely chocolate skin and an orange neon bikini thong. She smiled while flirting with a Mexican gangster type gentleman with face tattoos. He looked to David like he was part of a cartel or something. Another girl passed David in a business suit, getting up from a couch, blowing her freshly painted nails. David looked down, confused. There were too many options and not enough time. Who would it be? David thought to himself. But then it happened in an instant. Out of David's peripheral vision, a fair-skinned girl that looked like she may have been half black and half white, with her hair pulled up into a simple ponytail, walked into the main room. She looked like an angel in her she looked like an angel in all white in an all white bathing suit that showed off her gorgeous curves. She had freckles that were perfectly spaced on her cheeks with deep dimples that you could fill with water had she smiled hard enough. There was a magnetic attraction that David felt, something about her being so beautiful and so normal looking, like a normal girl next door vibe that drove David crazy. And David almost fainted at the look of her smile. She was perfect. She was gorgeous. She was it. That's her. That's the one I want to spend the rest of my life with, David thought. Then in a bit of shiftiness, a young man with three gold chains and black leather pants caught David's attention in his peripheral vision. He was standing in the corner, shaking his leg, impatiently looking directly at the goddess in white that David had deemed his own. He looked like a drug addict in need for a fix. Oh, hell no, David thought to himself. I'm not letting this one get away at all. David got up and speed walked his way over to the counter where the young lady was trying to be as inconspicuous as possible. Okay. David got up and sped walked over to the counter where the girl was trying to be as inconspicuous as possible. Excuse me, David said shyly. Sorry, guys. I got dogs barking over here and the fire trucks. This is the pain of doing this at home. But we shall tough through. You hear that? There's a second fire truck, too, during this episode. Let me just try to get through this real quick. Sorry, guys. You can press on the speed times 2 for a second. I think we'll be okay. Excuse me, David said shyly. The young lady turned around as her previous satisfied client walked out the door and looked to David. To his surprise, she hadn't looked at him in disgust like Bernice did back at Fortune Garden, but she smiled. David needed that. But before the princess could utter a single word, the young guy from earlier quickly invaded their space. The young lady looked at the kid strangely from his approach, and David, of course, clammed up like a pussy. Do you know where the restroom is? David said aloud, then immediately regretted it. Restroom? What the hell are you thinking, idiot? David thought to himself. Don't fuck this up. Oh, yeah, says the girl. Down the hall, last door on the right-hand side next to the golden cat painting. She flashed a smile that almost made David faint yet again. Thanks, said David. My name is David. David and the young lady locked eyes, and a flicker or something of the sort made David's heart go into hyperspeed. Brianna, she replied. David was in such awe that he forgot about the young asshole who stood to his right trying to take his girl. Hey, man, I had her next, said the young man, looking as angry as a cat jumping out of a pool of water. Oh, David replied. You were just what? Said the young man as he interrupted, now moving to Brianna's side, putting his arm around her. I saw you over there trying to take my girl. I know that look, rookie. David looked defeated. His heart rate was still high now, but it was still high, but now from possible fear. Brianna took the young man's arm off of her shoulder. Wait, David? You're my 10 o'clock, right? David looked around a little confused, then back at Brianna. Then she winked twice, enticing him to go along with the story. Oh, me? Yeah, yes. David, you're 10 o'clock. Now, the young flashy kid looked confused. You had an appointment? He said. David could only muster out a shake of his head while the youngster looked back and forth between the two of them in frustration. The young man then smiled as he pulled out a wad of cash. Honey, ditch the loser and I'll make sure you make more money tonight than you usually do in a week. The kid smiled at Brianna, then to David, anticipating the victory. Brianna looked at David, then back at the kid, then pulled David by the arm. Sorry, honey, rules are rules, but I'm sure somebody will be with you shortly. Brianna walked with David down the hallway. David looked back, still in shock at the young kid who now stormed back to his seat. Brianna stopped at her room door, which was the only door painted in shimmering gold. "You don't have to stay with me if you don't want to," said Brianna. "Sometimes you have to let those type of clients down gently, or they can start fights. Did you already have somebody else that you wanted to spend your time with tonight?" David damn near pissed himself. To be in the presence of a lady of this caliber had already been worth the drive, David thought to himself, how a gorgeous woman like this could work in this place. "No, ma'am. I'd like to spend my time with you," David said, and Brianna smiled at David and gave him a peck on the cheek. Then the two of them made their way into Brianna's room. Boom! So, all right. So this is Love and Carcinoma. We got our boy David, who's not the most attractive person on the planet, but is a little richy rich. He's, spent his whole life working, not doing anything else but work, you know, taking care of his parents and all that other stuff. And, you know, at the ripe age of 42, found out that he has some rare carcinoma in his lungs. I think that's like a lung cancer, right? I didn't really do that much research on that. But, and it's going to kill him. He's about to die. He says, "Fuck this, and I'm out of here." So he goes and, you know, since he's a virgin, 40-year-old virgin technically, 42-year-old virgin, he is like, you know, "I'm going to go and try to find this whole feeling that my parents had all this time. Before I get out of here." And he goes to the bunny ranch. Now, I had thought about this place a long time ago. I don't know if it thought it in my mind as a story or just someplace that I wanted to go personally for myself. But yeah, I had thought about this place a long time ago. But as far as this story and somebody ending their life and wanting to go out in a blaze of lust and sex and beauty, I had that had just came to me. I don't recall really where it started, but yeah, I wrote this right after, I think I started this before A Black Guy Walks Into a Bar, and that one, I finished that one relatively shortly and then went back to this one. This one is taking a while for me to finish, and we're about at the halfway point or so, I would say. Well, 11 pages out of 18 pages, so a little bit past half. But I meant to say this disclaimer in the beginning of the podcast that, you know, obviously with all the curse words, and then on the second half of this episode where these two, you know, have fun with each other, is going to be extremely graphic. So if you don't like that type of stuff, I understand if you can't listen to this or the second episode. I should have put all of that disclaimer in the beginning, but I kind of forgot trying to get to the story. So look, I hope that you guys like it. And I thought this was a pretty interesting concept of how, you know, we go through our lives sometimes doing so much stuff that don't mean anything, and just to get to the end and be like, what the hell was I doing here all this time? Worrying about money, worrying about people, worrying about what people feel and think about me and stuff. So it manifested into this. The universe put this through me and I put it down on paper. So yeah. But anyway, it's Friday night, February 1st, 2019. I'm going to go out now after doing this work, hang out with some buddies for a little while. So shout outs to Mark Fernandez, my homie, for letting me hang at his house. But yeah, so I thank you guys for listening to Dialogue Heavy with yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. You guys can leave me a message on here. They have voice messages to leave, or you can leave a comment or whatever on Instagram. It's at Michael period McMillan. That's at Michael period McMillon. And I will talk to you guys soon, man. Appreciate the listening, and yeah, let's do this. Let's keep it going. Holla at you later. Peace. Somebody here.